is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome into another episode of Locked On Bowls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bowls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bowls. And if you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you email us at lockedonbowls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 Score. Cody, are we going to see Rajon Rondo again in the series?
Rajon Rondo hoisting jump shots before Bulls practice. Set jump shots.
Set shots, yeah.
With his right hand a couple times in front of the cameras just to tease everyone. Then went back to hoisting some left-handed floaters and dribbling. And riling everyone up, trying to answer the looming question for the Bulls, the only thing that can save the Bulls against the Celtics in a series is tied 2-2. Can Rajon Rondo come back? Ruled out of Game 5 on Wednesday night as of now.
So not 100%. Even that wasn't 100%.
Fractured right thumb, of course, that he suffered in Game 2 of the series. That hard cast is off, I believe, since the last time we talked to you here on Locked On Bulls. He did have a splint and a wrap has kind of been on it. Is that right, Sean?
Yeah.
Part of that was to immobilize the wrist. He's had an injured tendon, too. The Bulls say the wrist tendon is not the concern. It remains the fractured thumb. And right now, the Bulls are apparently a fractured team without him because they've lost two games to the Celtics. One in Game 3 was pretty much in humbling fashion. Game 4 was, I think, a case of the Celtics being more talented and the Bulls not having enough in the tank. But Rondo, Sean, what's your inkling here? And is this simply a pain management thing? Is this a how productive can he be? Is this a can he shoot the ball sort of thing?
I don't think it's a question of how productive can he be, because I think with what we've seen out of the Bulls' other point guards, even Rajon Rondo with only one functional hand is going to be a better option than playing Jaren Grant or Michael Carter-Williams any more minutes than absolutely necessary. I think it's just a matter of pain tolerance, because this is not, I mean, it's a small thumb fracture. This isn't the kind of thing where he's playing with a torn ligament or something where, like, there's a huge risk of re-injury or making the injury worse by playing on it. It's your hand. You don't walk on your hand, so it's not a lower body injury, which I think is a positive. It's just a matter of how much pain he can tolerate, and this is a guy, you have to remember, played with basically a dislocated elbow during a playoff series against Miami back when he was with the Celtics in 2011. Played basically a full quarter of a game with a partially torn ACL before they discovered that injury a couple days later.
Played in Game 2 with this current injury.
Played with this injury before, you know, the next day he was in so much pain that he had them look at it and they discovered the fracture. I would guess he probably doesn't play tomorrow in Boston. I think there is a pretty good chance, and this is not based on any inside information, this is just based on the sense I'm getting and kind of his history of playing through stuff and trying to come back early from stuff. I think there's a pretty solid chance that he tries to play in Game 6, especially if the Bulls lose tomorrow, which, I mean, I've seen no indications based on the last couple of games that they're going to win tomorrow in Boston.
Yeah, you know, this is finger problems, fractured fingers, broken fingers, jammed fingers. Kobe Bryant used to play through those on his left hand quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
On his non-shooting hand. Obviously, the concern here with this is that it is his shooting hand. And that's a completely different dynamic, obviously. But at the same time, while Rondo, again, around the 35.5% three-point mark or so, I think, in the regular season, had hot three-point shooting kind of in the last couple months of the season, and was more of a threat there than I expect him to be, at least. He's not a guy who makes his living by shooting jump shots. What he did so well for the Bulls in the first two games was get everyone involved, and that was with his mind, that was with his passing, and really is just with his feel for the game for perfect timing, I think. And did a great job pushing the pace when needed, and kind of reeling it back a little bit when needed as well for the Bulls in those games that they won in Boston. I think he can still do all of that pretty darn effectively, even with the fractured thumb, if he's okay dribbling with that hand. And I don't know how different. I don't have this injury. We haven't talked to him since he's been doing a little bit in practice as far as left-handed stuff and shooting these set shots and everything. So I don't know how painful it is. But again, you go back and everything about this guy's history, especially in the playoffs, like you're going to have to drag him off the court usually. So yes, I get the feeling that we will see Rajon Rondo in this series again. Again, same thing. No insider information. Nothing Fred Hoiberg has said on the record either says he is coming back for Game 6 or a potential Game 7. He called it a long shot, I think, to return in this
series. But I think that was more just not wanting to get anybody's hopes up. I don't think Fred has an exact percentage of chance that it is. Because, I mean, again, as we know with Rondo, if he has any ability to play, it's just a matter of how much pain he can tolerate. And I'm not going to be the one sitting here, A, not a doctor, and B, not having this exact injury, saying, hey, Rondo should try to play through this, he shouldn't try to play through this. Only he knows his body. Only he knows how much pain he can or can't play through. But just based on his history, I think there's a better chance than not that we're going to see him. How well it goes is a different thing, but I think he's going to give it a shot.
Yeah, and look, Michael Carter-Williams can't shoot anyway. So that's not.
Right, and it's not like Rondo's strength is his shooting, because when you have MCW or Jaren out there, they're basically playing 4-on-5 at both ends of the floor, because those guys are such non-factors that if Rondo's out there, even if he can't shoot the way that he was shooting, which wasn't great in the first place, he's gonna be a better playmaker than those guys. He's gonna be out there calling out defensive assignments. Everything just functions better when he's out there.
Yeah, I would have to go back and check each shot more closely in the stats, but I feel like in games 1 and 2, what, he averaged 11 points, 10.5 points. Most of those were layups or little runners, okay?
Yeah.
So it's not like he was doing a heavy lifting on jump shooting in those first two games of the series. The effectiveness part, because that's still so much of a question, I do agree that the logical thing for the Bulls to do is start Isaiah Cannon in game 5, which is going to happen for Hoiberg. Made that clear at Monday's practice. 34 minutes for the previously inactive Isaiah Cannon.
Yeah.
Played 34 minutes in that Game 4 loss out of nowhere. And I don't know if maybe he gets that many minutes again in Game 5, because I don't know who else you're giving him to. And look, Fred Hoiberg made the quote today at practice that Cannon's been playing really well, especially on the scout team in recent weeks, which is just, as Casey Johnson of the Trib pointed out, just an absolutely shocking quote to hear a coach say in the playoffs, basically.
That's something you really don't want to hear the coach say about a guy who's about to start a playoff game that could become, the difference between going up 3-2 or going home facing an elimination game. Is, he's on this scrub unit, he's actually played really well. Like, that's not great, but that's kind of the Bulls for you.
I want to point this out about Cannon. Like, I think the camp I'm in is that he scored 13 points the other night, so he contributed offensively. Yeah. Like, he played really hard. Like, I mean, I thought all the effort was there. I felt like when he was on the court that it wasn't like, oh, Cannon has the ball. Like, everyone get worried and there's that gasp from the crowd. You know what I mean? Like, oh, no, here we go again when he has the ball. That feeling wasn't there. Like, he belonged on the court, okay?
Which is more than you can say about Jaren Grant or Michael Carter-Williams in this series.
Yes. So that part felt okay. The problem is, despite how hard he played, despite all of that, Isaiah Thomas still got into the lane at will. Again, on him, on Jimmy Butler, on Michael Carter-Williams, on Jaren Grant in those first 4 minutes that Jaren got to play. Like, he got into the lane whenever he wanted, and Isaiah Cannon, while he made him work really hard and dogged him up and down the floor for 90 feet sometimes, sometimes 3/4 of the floor, sometimes half court. Like, and I thought he played really hard. It's different from saying he was a difference maker. You know what I mean? There's nothing about it that makes me feel like playing him in Game 5 is what's going to put the Bulls over the top. It's Rondo coming back that would lead to that hope.
Right, but, you know, we're grading on a curve here. He was a difference maker when you compare him to who was playing at those point guard minutes before him after Rondo got injured. You know, compared to those, yeah, what he gave them was nice, but in terms of whether that's actually going to swing a playoff series, you know, it totally comes down. I think if Rondo comes back and is at least some semblance of what he was doing before the injury, I think the Bulls have a chance to win this series. If he doesn't, I think they're done.
The other part we need to point out is, I know some are clinging to this hope, and we're obviously talking about it here, that Rondo can be a savior for the Bulls if he comes back for whether it's one game, maybe two in this series. It's possible. It's a lot more likely that the Celtics just figure out the Bulls by going small and are owning them because Rajon Rondo isn't out there. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Not because Rondo isn't out there, but because the Celtics, what they do best in the regular season was play small, spread the floor with shooters around Isaiah Thomas, and just perform really well with that. I mean, they had one of the best offenses. They rode Thomas a lot in the fourth quarter of games. But it is highly likely, and the probability is, that the Celtics are just better than the Bulls, and even if Rondo does come back, it's not going to matter that much. So we need to keep that in mind when we say, when we're talking and assessing this series, when we're talking about grading on a curve and everything. Maybe the curve, the only curve we need to grade on, is pointing out that the Celtics are the better team and figure out what they should do against the Bulls. Did want to let you know, there will be a Game 6 no matter what in Chicago on Friday night between the Bulls and the Celtics. And if you want tickets to it, you should go to SeatGeek because it's the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for all the basketball games, football games, baseball games, concerts, anything you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being in the stadium and the arena for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. You can be anywhere, anytime, with just a few clicks, instantly find the seats for this weekend or any game of the year. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek always finds you the lowest available price. SeatGeek wants to give you the most bang for your buck, so every single ticket is scored on a grade value. You can see underpriced seats and find the best deals to fit your budget. Every ticket from SeatGeek, 100% guaranteed back, so shop with confidence. What we need you to do, listeners of Locked On Bulls, download the SeatGeek app. Go to Settings tab, click Add a Promo Code. Promo code LOBULLS, LOBULLS. Use that and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase with LOBULLS promo code. Sean, adjustments the Bulls can make, need to make, might be last-ditch adjustment or effort, but what can they do in Game 5?
Well,
outside of Rajon Rondo coming back, what can they do on the floor?
Well, one thing that has not worked for them, and we kind of saw this in the fourth quarter last night, they tried to go small with the Celtics' small unit. Robin Lopez didn't play at all in the fourth quarter, and obviously that didn't work because the Celtics were, you know, totally took control of the game by that point. You know, when they were winning those first two games, Robin Lopez was just owning them on the glass. He was getting putbacks. He was just they had no way to guard him. I feel like you're not going to beat the Celtics going small because that's what they do best. They don't have anybody to handle Robin Lopez in certain matchups. So I think you should maybe go back and look at trying him a little bit more. I know Cristiano Felicio was in some foul trouble, so that was, you know, a little bit forcing their hand in terms of, you know, what rotations they could play. But I would maybe try playing Robin Lopez in the fourth quarter. That's one idea.
That run in Game 4, the decisive run at the end of the third quarter for the Celtics, where they retook control of the game after losing it, came with Joffrey Laverne on the floor for the Bulls, and he didn't play well enough make any difference in that stretch. So that was weird to me and not a good decision by Fred Hoiberg in hindsight. I know in the moment, in the time, you're throwing a lot against the wall, but I would revert back to what worked, like you said. But the problem with that is the high pick and roll. Celtics are just going to throw Thomas and Horford in it again and again and again. I'm assuming Gerald Green starts Game 5 for the Celtics again. Brad Stevens has given no indications that won't be the case. Spread the floor with Crowder and Bradley still. And it's really tough for the Bulls. I don't know, again, the best way to defend that when Robin Lopez is on the court. You might just have to make the concession that Thomas is going to get in the paint whenever he wants still, but that's already what happened in game four, and Robin Lopez wasn't out there on the other end enough to punish the Celtics for, you know, being out there and the Bulls wanting to play their way. So one adjustment I would make, because the season is on the line, I know Jimmy Butler already left it all on the floor 46 minutes the other night. I know he arguably has more responsibility in the playoffs right now than any player. I think he probably does.
Except maybe LeBron.
But LeBron didn't...
Kyrie and Love were bad in the Pacers.
But they were the favorites, too. Like, there were... I mean, the Cavs coasted in the first half of Game 3 and 4 completely, right?
Yeah.
Before deciding to turn it on. Like, the play-to-play responsibility, the effort that any single one player is called to put in these playoffs, Jimmy Butler might have the biggest responsibility there.
I think you're probably right, because he played 46 minutes in Game 4. They literally couldn't take him off the floor.
Yeah. And so I recognize all that, and I still say Jimmy Butler probably needs to guard Isaiah Thomas more in Game 5 than he did in Game 1, 2, 3, or 4. And I know the first two games, it almost worked to perfection for the Bulls because they kind of controlled the game on the offensive glass. And Thomas, you know, really in Game 1 especially did his thing. Played so well. I think he still had 20 points in Game 2. But then the Bulls, with Jimmy a little more fresh, was able to just go on him in the fourth quarter and really be the closer to shut it down defensively. And so many times we've seen him be the offensive closer this year, but he really helped the Bulls defensively at the end of those games. But again, like, if you play Jimmy Butler and Isaiah Thomas more, he's a better defender than anyone else to defend him. And you go with that no point guard lineup, then you have Paul Zipser and D-Wade on the wings, and then Robin Lopez and probably Mirotić at power forward. Again, we've said that's probably their best five-man lineup right now, mm-hmm. with Rondo out. And you can then punish the Celtics on the boards and have some offensive identity still. I mean, Zipser, he's played fairly well when he's got opportunities and chances at open shots in this series, you know?
Yeah.
And you got to rely on him a little bit, but then turn some of those offensive playmaking duties over to Dwayne Wade. You got to pray that D-Wade and Nico can carry a bigger offensive role. Because again, I don't see the Bulls winning this series unless Dwayne Wade's got to step up and have one of those vintage games somehow. Nico Mirotić has to be able to give the Bulls 16, 17 points from the power forward position. But if you do those things and Jimmy can take the break a little more offensively, and then you put him on Thomas, they're still going to throw him in the high pick and roll, but Jimmy Butler is your best chance to stop that pick and roll, because his length and quickness and smarts and strength can affect Isaiah Thomas. So I know that's asking a lot, last-ditch effort, but I don't know what other adjustments you make. But that kind of goes hand-in-hand, too, with the no-point guard, best five-man lineup, because Jimmy would naturally probably have to guard Isaiah Thomas in those moments.
Yeah, I would think so, too. The other thing I would have to say about just kind of, you know, speaking of Isaiah Thomas, and I realize maybe part of this in the last game was just that Jimmy Butler was just completely gassed and he just didn't want to attack. Isaiah Thomas was out there with four fouls. He got switched onto Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy kicks it out to, I think it was LaVerne. He kicked it out to somebody for a corner three that they airballed. You have to attack Isaiah Thomas every single time because every single player on the floor has an advantage over him if he's the one guarding you. You have to go at him every single time. That's, you know, get him in foul trouble or get easy buckets. You have to at least make that more of your strategy, and I feel like Fred Hoiberg should have known a little bit more to say, hey, you know, Isaiah Thomas has four fouls. We should maybe go at him instead of, you know, when you get switched on him, try to kick it out for a corner three.
Fred was asked about that in the postgame, and he claimed, and I use claimed because many of us watching the game in the media did not see this in the same light as he did, but he claimed they were running a lot of screens and actions to get Isaiah in that. But it did not feel that way watching it. Again, I haven't gone back and watched every play in that game on film review. I'll leave that up to people that are a lot smarter than me to decipher a lot of those things. But I think most people were in agreement that they did not attack Isaiah Thomas nearly as well as they should have. Or the actions that they designed allowed for an easy enough out for Isaiah Thomas to switch on to someone else. You know what I mean? But again, like, that's the thing. You have Isaiah Cannon out there. He can kind of hide Thomas on him. I mean, he has to defend him at the three-point line. But there's no permutation where the Bulls are running high pick and roll with Isaiah Cannon or running him off screens like Reggie Miller just to wear down Isaiah Thomas.
You know, no, that's ridiculous.
He's a spot-up shooter on offense. He's a bit player in that regard. You put Paul Zipser out there, and again, you're not running high pick and roll with Paul Zipser, but at least if you have him out there, maybe come off a couple screens and then put him on the block if Isaiah Thomas is on him. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to get Isaiah Thomas on Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade a ton, but if you run screen and roll with the 1-2 or 1-3 pick and roll, you can sometimes, and every possession, you can get Isaiah Thomas to play defense. Try to punish him down there because that will wear him out a little bit, and maybe he's not quite as energetic to get into the lane. I don't know. Like, but basketball is not rocket science. The plays they draw up sometimes can be rocket science. Mm-hmm. They can be brilliant. There's things that we don't see the way defenses play, but other times it is as simple as the 1-4, the 1-3, the 2-3 pick and roll, whatever it is, and switching that player onto someone else that you want them to be on, or forcing their action to double team or make other concessions elsewhere on the floor. And again, not rocket science, but the Bulls need to get back, I think, to some of this if they want to have a chance in Game 5. Another big storyline heading into Game 5 is, will Fred Hoiberg's criticism of the officiating following Game 4 for Isaiah Thomas, carrying the ball, in the words of Fred, every possession, with his hesitation dribble and allowed to put his palm under the ball, which gives him an advantage over the defender and allows him to throw a quick pass if he wants to as well, in a way that your hand being on top of the ball does not allow for that. Will that affect the officiating at all in Game 5? And do you think it'll affect officiating, Sean?
Here's a spoiler. No.
No.
They never call that. It's not an Isaiah Thomas thing. It's everybody. Dwayne Wade gets away with that. Jimmy Butler gets away with that. Everybody gets away with that. That's just, I mean, and I just want to point out, by the way, that today at practice, Fred Hoiberg was asked if he had heard anything from the league office about his comments, because usually when a coach or a player says something like that, that's a criticism of the officials, they're going to get fined. David Fizdale got fined $30,000 for his rant.
They ain't going to rook us.
Right, he got fined $30,000 for that. Fred said he hasn't heard anything about it. It's been 2 days since his comments. Usually that kind of happens 2 days afterwards. We would have probably heard something by now if he was going to get fined. So I just think it's so fitting that the one time Fred Hoiberg actually like tries to stand up for himself publicly, it's so
tame.
It's so tame that the league isn't even going to fine him for it when they usually fine coaches for that kind of thing.
Yeah, that you mentioned that off air, and I was thinking to myself, well, I used the word blasted in the headline because, I mean, as soon as Fred did that, he went out of his way, and he was about as...
He was unprompted.
Yeah, unprompted, and about as angry as I'd seen him. The most angry I'd ever seen him, for sure, about the officiating in his 2 years with the Bulls. About, I think, as angry as I've seen him in general. Maybe, I think there were a couple times where he was really frustrated with the Bulls' effort in certain games. But, I mean, as far as outside influences, hadn't seen him that angry at anyone in a long time. So I put the word blasted in the headline. I didn't think it fit to put Fred Hoiberg tamely blast the officials.
Well, here's the thing, Cody. Like,
in hindsight, I kind of see.
I understand your concern about maybe using the wrong word in that headline, but with Fred Hoiberg and this kind of stuff, we're grading on a curve. Like, when you compare it to like what David Fizdale did the other day, or some of the other famous, like, you know, what Doc Rivers said about that one call in the Clippers-Oklahoma City series like 3 years ago, the one that basically decided one of the games in that series that and led to the Clippers losing that series. When you compare it to that, he wasn't blasting the officials, but when you're grading it against every other thing that Fred Hoiberg has ever said publicly on the record, where he goes out of his way to avoid any kind of controversy or offending anybody in any way, then yeah, I think this qualifies as being as blasting the officials, like just in Fred Hoiberg terms.
You reinstilled my confidence in my headline writing, so thank you for that, Sean.
I do what I can.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's going to do anything either. And it cracks me up. I mean,
that's not
criticizing officials can have a purpose and can work a little bit, give you a little bit more of an edge than you had before, or in your mind, a little bit more of a fair whistle than you had before when you thought you're on the short end of it. But this isn't the part of the rule book to complain about in this. You're complaining about the entire history of the NBA. You're not actually complaining about a judgment call.
Right.
You're complaining about a, what, letter of the law that isn't ever enforced because we love the spirit of the game and the game's more fun.
Right, because, I mean, David Fizdale had a legit beef with how many fouls the Spurs were getting called for and how many fouls the Grizzlies were getting called for in that game. You know, and he wanted to stand up for his guys and, you know, there was a chance that would actually make a difference. And I think in the next game, the foul disparity was a little bit more even. Fred Hoiberg is not going to win this battle about a call that has been getting made all, like that's, this is like, no, this is not the battle you want to pick. And I think it's really fitting that this is the battle that he decided to pick when he finally decided to pick a battle.
I just imagine this getting relayed to the head of officiating in the NBA league office. And then there's looking at the box score. They look at it and go, LOL, Jimmy went to the line 23 times. Like, the Bulls have gotten a very, very fair whistle in this series. I thought the officials have done a really good job both ways in this series. There is nothing, and there's nothing more on earth than I hate when someone's initial reaction is to blame the officials, and that's not what Fred's initial reaction is.
No.
I'm talking about the average fan, or not the average fan, but some of the fans that go for the low-hanging fruit instead of criticizing the issues with their team, that needs to be in my Twitter bio. Like, if your first instinct is to complain about the officials, we can't be friends. Sorry.
Well, so what's actually really funny, I was in Boston for games 1 and 2, and I mean, I found it kind of endearing, but the crowd at the TD Garden legitimately believes that the Celtics have never committed a foul, like, as a franchise in their entire history. Every single foul call, even if it's the most obvious foul in the world, they're booing and they're chanting, like, these refs suck. I don't know. I feel like you have to kind of treat officiating. Our friend Matt Moore of CBS has said this before. You have to treat officiating as an act of God. Like, it's either going to go your way or it's not. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't, you know, blame it. And it's also, like, in some of these cases, like, if there's a crucial call that led to, you know, that led to the result of a game, maybe you should have played better so that the game wasn't close enough that that one call affected the game.
The NBA released information, I think, right before the end of the regular season or the day after, that pointed out officials correctly called or made the correct non-call 98% of the time in the last 2 minutes of close games this year, the games that the league reviews under the last 2 minutes report. 98% of the time, so that's 49 times out of every 50 occurrences, the officials made the right call with the game on the line. And I know people are like, what about the other 46 minutes? Well, it's probably 98% for the other 46 minutes, too. Like, they are remarkable, so.
Being a referee is such a thankless job. Everybody's going to kill you and say you should be fired for the 1% of the time that you get the call wrong, but most of the time you get it right, and it's, nobody's going to say, well, you know, that was a really well-officiated game. I have to really compliment the referees on that. And the other thing is, people who talk about how bad NBA refs are, watch college basketball, yes, watch international basketball in the Olympics.
Worse.
Like, where are you supposed to find, let's say you don't like what these, you know, you think these refs are doing a better job. Where are you supposed to find better refs that are replacement? Because these are the best refs in the world.
No, the NBA does a very good job training their officials and also finding the best ones. Excellent refereeing. And that's not to say we won't break down some crucial calls that maybe go against the Bulls, or that I'm sure we did it earlier in the year on this podcast. There
right,
might
there,
be one in game 5 or 6, and there
right,
will be more next year.
Right, but there's a difference between pointing out that a call was missed and saying, yeah, in this isolated incident, yeah, maybe this call swung this game. Or, you know,
and having an umbrella opinion.
Right, having an umbrella opinion saying, oh, well, this game was rigged against whoever. Like, that's not really what we're about. That's not what we like to do.
No.
And we generally think that Fred Hoiberg's beef with the officials about this carrying rule are pretty
I don't think Fred believes it.
No.
There's no part of me that thinks Fred Hoiberg earnestly believes anything he said in that refereeing rant.
No, he was just trying to do something. I think he saw the effect that what David Fizdale did had on the Grizzlies, and he was just like, hey, you know, nothing else is working. Let me try this.
Some frustration in there, too.
Yeah, he was genuinely frustrated.
I don't think the Bulls think that it's going to make any difference at all, either. So, blowover, I guess Fred won't be fined $25,000. Good for Fred. Rajon Rondo, I think, is appealing his $25,000 fine for the fake trip, the late trip attempt of Jay Crowder along the sideline, because why not? Rajon Rondo would rather have $25,000 in his wallet than not have $25,000.
I think all of us would.
Yes. And I found it. I hope Rondo wins his appeal. I know it's an act of trolling, no doubt, but
I think that'd be pretty funny.
I think the fact that he is so smart, well, several points. He's so smart to have done the fake trip just after Jay Crowder went by. Look at the video, and he did do it after he went by. Like a split second went by. I think it was so calculated, and I think he was so good at the timing of that. And then the post-game comment that we should just waive the fine. You know what I mean? My knee stiffened up because I tore my ACL. Like, the brilliance of him actually pulling it off all in that fashion, I think, should waive the fine. In my opinion. In my humble opinion, John.
I'm just here for the drama.
This is so great. We're talking about Rajon Rondo trying to trip somebody from the bench when he's injured, like, while he's wearing a short-sleeved blazer. Like, everything about this is so great.
Yeah. So, the drama now. Will Rajon Rondo return in the series? Sean will be there game 5 in Boston to bring you updates to assess that. Game 6 will be back at the United Center Friday night. And yeah, if we're betting men, I'm a betting man sometimes. I'm not going to bet on this one, but I would expect him to return at some point in this series, at least for a minute, to give it a go, see how it goes. But right now, the Bulls continuously have basically ruled him out of Game 5 as of now, as far as they know. They've made no indication he's coming back for either of the last potential two games. Either we'll keep you updated on Locked On Bulls, which you can follow on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls. It's on Facebook by the same name as well. Sean is on Twitter, at Hyken. Be sure to follow all of his dispatches from Boston and read his work at The Athletic. Those guys have been doing an excellent job on many topics. Read my work at 670score.com. Follow me at Cody Westerlin on Twitter. Most of all, please subscribe to the podcast.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play. Anywhere else you can find podcasts, make sure you go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, preferably only 5 stars. Tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. Check out Locked On Celtics for the continued Celtics perspective on this series. They usually do a pretty entertaining job with that. And as we've mentioned before, have a great theme song. If you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I will be flying to Boston tomorrow morning. I will be at Game 5 in Boston tomorrow night. We'll have an episode for you after that. Thanks for listening.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.